Welcome to the Off the Page podcast from Franciscan Media, a podcast that will feature in-depth conversations with Franciscan authors and artists. My name is Stephen Copeland, and I'm the book editor here at Franciscan Media, and today I'll be interviewing one of the most prolific writers and poets in the Franciscan world, Father Murray Bodo. Father Murray is a Franciscan priest and an award-winning author of numerous books, including his best-selling Francis, The Journey and the Dream, Nourishing Love, A Franciscan Celebration of Mary, and most recently, God's Love Song, The Vision of Francis and Claire, which he co-authored with Susan St. Singh. His book, Song of the Sparrow, Four Seasons of Prayer, will be republished in August 2024 as we near the book's 50th anniversary. It will feature a brand new introduction and several new poems, one of which he reads during this interview. All these books can be purchased in our store at shop.franciscanmedia.org. A little more about Father Murray. He is a founding staff member of Franciscan Pilgrimage Programs, where he led yearly pilgrimages to Assisi, Italy for over 40 years before retiring in 2020. He has had poems, stories, and articles published in magazines and literary journals in the United States, England, and Ireland. Father Murray resides in the inner city over the Rhine neighborhood of Cincinnati, Ohio, where he continues to write and minister. I am really excited to share this interview with you. As you'll hear, Father Murray is such a kind and present person, someone who is not only generous with his time, but also with his willingness to share with people very real and honest moments from his life. The interview went longer than expected, so we have split it into two episodes. I hope you enjoy. Here is Father Murray Bodo. So I wanted to start, Father Murray, with God's Love Song, which just came out, and then Song of the Sparrow, which, nearing the 50-year anniversary of that book, and it's going to be reprinted this year. And both of these books really revolve around prayer. So I figured I'd give you a softball question to start out, something that's not complex at all. What is prayer?
I'm leaving. The eternal question, what is prayer? You know, as looking at these two books, Song of the Sparrow and God's Love Song, you know, they're like 50 years apart in the writing. I saw, re-looking at Song of the Sparrow, almost the first page, I was already talking about prayer and what is prayer. And practically everything that I have written, except for Francis, The Journey and the Dream, which is a life of Francis, but there's all kinds of prayer stuff in there as well. But there was something about the whole concept of prayer that was with me, it's been with me since I was a kid. You know, I used to stare at statues when I was 10 years old, wondering why they couldn't stare back or talk back. I would talk to them. I was in church, you know. And so I was always trying to make this connection with God. How do we do that? And in this, in Song of the Sparrow, when I was teaching, I taught at this seminary for 12 years. I was the English teacher and writing teacher, one of them. We had two. And I was also the spiritual director. So prayer had a lot to do with words at that time, because books had influenced me so much. And I wanted to try to teach my students the craft of writing, for one thing, and then the love of reading. And so I was constantly working with words. And so I gave them a word to help them see what prayer is. And the word I gave them was sport. That they would
Love that, yeah.
And the S in that word stands for silence. So this, that whole, for me, prayer involves preparation. It means hanging around with silence, with learning to be silent, with being comfortable with yourself in silence. It's a remote preparation, but it is also the territory where God hangs out in silence. And then the P of that word stood for purification. Somehow in the process, I'm trying to clear myself out of distracting things, of all those things that would take me away from the silence that God dwells in. So that I'm purifying my intentions, I'm purifying my mind, that I can be open, which is the O of the word. Once I'm purified my heart, then I'm open to whatever comes. And it might be nothing. It's like writing. You know, I write every day just about, and it's Flannery O'Connor said, I write every morning until noon. She said, I sit at my typewriter every morning until noon. Most of the time, nothing happens. But if it does, I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
I think that's prayer right there. You try to be in that space where you can meet God, where you can be in God's presence. And that's a whole long process. You know, I think sometimes when people pray, they like going into the presence of the Pope in Rome, and you just start talking. You don't introduce yourself. You don't try to see what kind of space you're in. You don't wait for him to greet you. You just start talking. Mm-hmm. And we wouldn't do something like that, but we do it in prayer sometimes. We have to prepare our hearts for it. Mm-hmm. And then there is always the R of the word sport, which is coming out of prayer. There's always some kind of response. I'm even if all I ever learned was silence, I've learned an awful lot. And so one response was immediately thanksgiving. Thank you for this hour you gave me. Thank you for these 20 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it is. And then the T of the word, with the students, I used to say, that's talking. Now you can talk. But I think even more importantly, it stands for time. All of this takes time. And we know what we love by the amount of time we put in on it. We have no time for prayer, but we can watch television for 3 or 4 hours and not even notice that the time was passing. Or we can play a game or whatever it is. Yeah. Because we love to do that. And prayer and being in God's presence, because there's so much silence, you have to learn to love that. You have to learn to prepare your heart for that sort of thing. So in a sense, the whole book, Song of the Sparrow, was about how do you do that from day to day?
Yep.
And I did it through words. You know, I'm trying to teach my students at that time the craft of writing. And you just put the words down. If you think of writing a perfect paragraph, you'll never write one. But if you just start writing, sooner or later, something will emerge from that that you discovered on the page. My writing teacher at University of New Hampshire, Donald M. Murray, wonderful teacher, he used to emphasize the inspiration of the writing pad. It happens while you're writing, and you say, oh, that's what I want to say, or that's what I'm talking about. It might be 2 or 3 pages into what you're writing. So I wanted to show the students that it was a process. And that I was putting these things, these thoughts, scattered thoughts, down all the way through the book. And they end up being a book at the end. Nobody can write a book. It's too awesome a thing to even think about. But you can write a paragraph. And if you write enough of them and begin to order them and then organize them, something starts to happen. So I would emphasize a lot in that book especially, that your prayer life has to be like a good craft that you learn. And yeah, it takes time. You have to be an apprentice. You have to be patient. You have to have some kind of master, some kind of director, some kind of mentor. It takes a long time. And so does writing, because I was a writer. I naturally did it by means of words, and my whole life has been English and American literature. So I'm like immersed in that world.
Yeah.
But as one of our friars said to us when we were in college, Father Leander, he said, well, literature won't save your souls, but it'll make your souls maybe worth saving. And there's something to that, you know. And all of that takes discipline. And so discipline is a day-to-day thing. You're just not disciplined because you're now in a golf tournament. We hope you had played a few games before you got to that. So you learn the discipline of your craft. Well, prayer is that way. And sometimes it is merely doing it. Whether anything happens or not, you pray the way you can pray.
Sure.
Donald Murray used to say of writing, you work at your craft and pray for art. You know, something else comes later. So you work at the discipline of prayer, all of its forms, the sacraments, prayer, petition, meditation, contemplation, which are two different things, but they are parts that you can learn. You know, I can learn how to be a gentleman. I can learn how to fence. I can learn how to dance. But if I will master that, it's usually a force outside of myself that enables that.
Yeah.
Inspiration. You know, the spirit comes to you. But it comes to you because you're working at whatever you're working at.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what the Song of the Sparrow, the first edition, 1976. I was in my 30s, and I didn't notice until we put out an issue, an edition rather, in 2008. I didn't realize that I only had fall, winter, and spring. Because that was the school year. I would take off for over 40 years. I would take off soon as school was over and go to Assisi and lead pilgrimages. So then I'd be thinking Franciscan spirituality, Franciscan this, Franciscan whatever. And that, of course, led to all of the Franciscan books. I've tried to write and publish, and the latest one being God's Love Song, because that is kind of a culmination of that other journey I made for 43 years going to Assisi. It's where I met Susan St. Singh, who wrote the book with me. And so things kind of tie together in a lifetime. Now that I'm in my 80s, I can't believe it, but you know, I can't be in denial forever. I am. I'm in my 80s, and so I see a kind of pattern that so much of my writing life and of my life as a poet even has had to do with prayer and my Franciscan spirituality. You know, I have in my collected poems, I have a huge section is poems on Francis and Claire that I wrote over all those years. And so our lives have a coherence. They have a pattern. And that's why we have to have some kind of discipline, or the life just goes off in all kinds of directions. And that's why I was so happy to see that Pope Francis is now going to canonize Carlo Acutis, the teenager from Milano, the Italian teenager, who died of leukemia at 15 and was a real computer geek and, you know, a real modern teenager, and using the internet to evangelize in his own way as a teenager. So he's a model, and how important the Eucharist was to his life. And so young people, not only young people, I'm inspired by that, but especially young people see a model who looks like them. He looks like a teenager because he is a teenager. And but he was also a very disciplined kid when it came to prayer, and also, you know, his computer work and all that. He wanted to be in computers, probably die right young and live inside of the computer.
Yeah,
he was. So that was a real. It's a real model, and therefore, in our life of prayer, in our life of the spirit, whatever our spirituality is, we need models. And in the Franciscan tradition, we have had a male-female model from the very beginning, Francis and Claire. And Francis sings the Canticle of the Creatures, calling all creatures male, female, brother, sun, sister, moon, brother, wind, sister, water, brother, fire, sister, earth, our mother, you know, male, female, male, female. And when we did our Assisi programs, we tried always to have, as guides, men and women, a man and a woman. So the pilgrim could identify not only with Franciscan spirituality, but with their own maleness or their own femaleness. And it's why Susan and I wanted to have two voices in this book. And she, of course, is a secular Franciscan, which helps a lot, because as she know, and she lived in Assisi for several years. So the to get the two voices are very, very important, especially in a church which for centuries was so male dominated, you know, where you have women's voices now emerging. It's a wonderful thing. And so that too was a part of the discipline of Franciscan spirituality, to realize that from the very beginning there is a male and female, very strong voice.
Yeah,
them, Francis and Claire, from the very beginning. And that's a kind of a magnet for people.
Yeah.
What else I want to say about that, but that's kind of one of the reasons for this God's love song, the vision of Francis and Claire.
Yep. Yeah.
We took the saint off of each one of the things. So to emphasize of this man and this woman, their vision, what was it? To hopefully welcome people who wouldn't be impressed by saints or whatever, but would be impressed by two voices out of the Middle Ages that were very strong voices.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of a summary of the book, Song of the Sparrow, much earlier.
Yeah.
In first edition in 76, and God's Love Song in 2024. And then in 2008, when we put out a 40th anniversary of Song of the Sparrow, I added a section, Summer. Amazingly, it seems to be to flow right from whatever the rest of it.
Yeah. What was it like for you to write that section? I'm guessing you wrote it from Assisi as you spent your summers there.
Yeah. But this one, I didn't write it in Assisi. I wrote it, I think most of it. I have a little hermitage in Florida. In the winter time, and of course it's about summer. That's a wonderful thing about writing. You can be wherever you want to be, even though you're in a place totally different. And as Hemingway said, I can write better about Michigan in Paris than I can in Michigan.
Yep. you need some longing.
Yeah, you need some longing. That's exactly the right word. You need some longing. So in the first edition, when I started out with autumn, which was always my favorite, still is, season, I could go up down that one, but I don't think I need to say why and everything. But anyway, I noticed I was going for a walk. I was walking. And then I'm out in the woods and I'm looking at trees. Trees are very, very important to me, and of all plants. And so in the new one, I'm on a train going up the Hudson River. I don't know where I was headed to. I think I was headed to, I don't know really, but I was going up the Hudson River on an Amtrak train, and the title of the first piece here for summer is called Journeys.
Yeah.
And I think I was beginning to realize how much of my life has been a journey. My whole life. I went on a Greyhound bus when I was 14 years old from Gallup, New Mexico to Cincinnati, Ohio, 1,500 miles away, to become a Franciscan friar in a high school seminary, which after 1 year after I was ordained, I was back to the same seminary teaching. In the same place, thinking I was going to be a missionary to the Navajos or whatever, especially the Navajo. That's what I thought I was being prepared for. But how journeys are, and then all those years to Assisi, back and forth and back and forth. And so the metaphor of journey is very important to me. And it just struck me that in 1972, when I was 35 years old, my first book I entitled Francis, the journey and the dream. And that is, it turns out to be my whole spirituality. The dream, of course, is prayer, the longing, the desire, all of that. And then the journey is the pilgrimage. We're on a pilgrimage in life. And we know that that metaphor is very strong today for people. It seems like everybody wants to make the Camino, the journey, the Spanish, what's the name of the place?
The Camino de Santiago,
Yeah, that whole idea of walking and of making the journey, how the journey, the outward journey is an inward journey, and the inward journey leads to an outward journey. And that was what I saw in St. Francis's life when I was a boy. I was drawn to him because, excuse me, at that time, our whole town, Gallup, New Mexico, the bishop was a Franciscan. The priests were Franciscan. The brothers were Franciscan. The sisters were Franciscan. So all of my connection with church and being a Catholic and all of that was through the lens of Franciscan spirituality, Franciscan way of looking at the world. And so it drew me so powerfully that I ended up having to go on that journey as a 14-year-old boy. And it was the draw of Frances, not so much Claire in those years. We didn't know much about her.
Sure.
This was the 50s. There was a book here and there on St. Claire, but she hadn't really emerged as she did when women's studies became a huge part of academia. And so women, powerful women and across the whole world of all religions and all beliefs and non-beliefs were beginning to emerge and show how strong their voice is and how essential it is. And so then Claire, everybody's writing about Claire because there were so many women scholars, but men too, started to dig into her writings. You know, it's amazing
how great
her writing is. And, you know, writing her sisters, writing their own rule, having to fight with five popes over the privilege of poverty, and having an order that is with us today, like male dimension of the order, it's with us today. So it's not just dependent on some superheroes somewhere, and when they die, it ends. But they founded something that was of God and was a need in the human heart.
Yeah. And so, yeah, and it was its own journey.
It was what?
It was its own journey.
Yeah.
For her and her sisters too. Yeah. And I think I know we keep coming back to that theme a little bit, journeying and journeying. One of my favorite things about Song of the Sparrow, Father Murray, is you really feel the movement in it. You feel the interior aspects of your journey. I mean, it's so, so many of the poems and reflections are raw and honest, but very grounded. And, you know, like you're very honest about times when you're waiting or you're a little bit uncomfortable or whatever it may be. All these things that are part of the journey. And I was wondering if you could maybe provide some commentary on that, the journey of prayer.
Yeah.
Because it entails emptiness, does it not? And waiting and discomfort. And at the same time, it's play too. It's sport. Right. You can be yourself. I'd love to hear some commentary on that from you.
Well, I was surprised at a certain period in my life. I think it was when I wrote the Song of the Sparrow, of how many poems are sprinkled through there. They're not sprinkled. They are integral to the text. The prose leads to the poem. And I was looking at the book this morning, and in this first section in Autumn, I have this, I'm talking about prayer, but I have, then this poem appears on the page, you know, which I had forgotten about. That's years ago when I wrote that. But I had a letter from a nun who is very, she can't leave the house. She's in a nursing home, and she's alone a lot. And she asked me if I had a holy card of this prayer. And so she sent the prayer. It is a poem. And I said, I wonder where that is. I was going through the book. I did find it. Mm. But here is the thing that had lasting meaning for her, because she said she's prayed it for years. And this is the poem. In the night, alone with my thoughts, I remember you, O God. In my empty room and emptier thoughts are filled with your love, your watchful care. And loneliness is changed to praise, to gratitude, that empty hearts are lodges for your loving presence. Well, that's just packed because it's a poem, and a poem is a condensation of a lot of things. So it's just, I thought, did I write that? But it resonates with me, of course, today. I was looking at something else, and that's in that first edition. And in the new edition,
could I keep you at that poem real quick for 1 second, and then would you mind commenting on when it comes to prayer or any certainly contemplation, meditation, it can be a lonely, almost terrifying experience at times. I don't know if you remember where that poem arose from within you, or the time and place, you know, you're kind of navigating at that time in your life. But I'd really be curious for you to talk about
where did that come
from? Loneliness. Yeah. How prayer can be a service to us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'll try. So there's a big difference. We started talking about loneliness and being alone. Being alone can be very comfortable, silence, or being alone can be loneliness. And that's what this alone is. So for some reason, I'm trying to think what I would. Well, it's night, and I'm alone at night. I want to be with somebody. I need somebody with me. I need the touch of another human being. I need the conversation. I need to feel less alone than I was feeling. So in the night, alone with my thoughts, you know that that's not Einstein. He would love his thoughts. But this is a heart poem. In the night, alone with my thoughts. And I don't say, I think of you, O God. I say, I remember you. I'm longing for something. I'm longing for someone. And I remember you, O Lord. Because somehow God, well, you can see it in the other pages, has touched my life, has been there for me, has been someone that I could lean on, someone I can love, someone I can touch. I remember you, O God, and my empty room and emptier thoughts are filled with your love. When I think of God, I don't remember any dogma, that's for sure. I remember your love, your watchful care. And you see already the loneliness is turning to companionship with God's Spirit within me. And loneliness is changed to praise. When I think of you, I'm lonely, and I think of you, and everything changes because I know you love me. I know you've cared for me. And I just have to praise you for that. How could you do that? Notice me, care about me. So it's changed to praise, to gratitude. And what am I grateful for? I say it's turned to praise, to gratitude, that empty hearts like mine here are really lodges, little lodgings.
I love that line. Yeah.
For your loving presence.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing about poetry. It's so packed that you have to kind of open it up. And sometimes the backstory, which I can't remember for this, but would make it even more something that can open up, because I'm talking about something that probably everybody has had this feeling.
Yes. Yeah.
And
that's one of my favorite things about the way you write, Father Murray, and it really comes out in your poetry, is your ability to go so deep into your own heart, just as it is in that moment. And in that, you really end up somewhere that's universal a lot of times.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, I've felt that, you know, like I felt like I'm trying to listen to God and seek God, and where is God?
Yeah.
God's not showing up, you know, but that longing in the middle of the night where, you know, the thoughts are just racing. And you're like, I want to get back to God. I don't know how to get there. Like we've all felt that poem that you just read.
You know, I don't know if I have a copy here. I should, of course, but of The Journey and the Dream, but it just struck me that the book opens with Francis unable to sleep, tossing and turning and thinking, the very thing that we're talking about. Maybe if we pause.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll go get
the
Okay, so here is the already on the second page of the Journey and the Dream, which was written in 1972, and Song of the Sparrow in 76. So there's 4 years in between there. But this is what is already, and the title of it is The Dream, that chapter. Francis tossed in his bed, straining his mind, begging it to relax, asking it to sleep, coaxing his body gently, then violently, to drop off into slumber. Quit thinking. Please sleep, mind. I have to rest, to sleep, or I'll never recover from this madness, this despair that's clutching at me here in the dark. He got up and paced the room, his hands ruffling his tangled black hair. What's the matter with me? This is so crazy. How can I be afraid and upset when there's nothing to be afraid of? It's so silly. Get back into bed, Francis. Relax. He dove into bed and lay face down, trying to feel exhausted, but he couldn't sleep. All night he tossed and sweated and asked himself why sleep never came easily anymore. Okay, so it goes on. There's a whole chapter like that. But obviously, I was somehow preoccupied with this part. I knew, of course, that Francis probably had post-traumatic stress and coming back from the war and all of that. And how could he not have these kinds of experiences and have them frequently? And how could he not jump if he heard a horse neighing too heavily or something like a war horse, you know? That kind of experience in a poem becomes a very condensed experience. And at that time, I didn't know I could write prose. I wrote that book out of obedience, that I was sent by the friars to Assisi to write it. I saw myself, and I had for years, as a poet, mainly a poet. And it's ironic that later in life, when I was in my 50s, I had a fellowship and a scholarship from the University of Cincinnati to get a doctorate in English that would involve a creative writing dissertation, either a book of poems or a book of short stories. And so for 4 years, I was pursuing from the year 50 till I was 54, 55, to getting this doctorate. I was like a grandfather with all the other graduate students there. But anyway, when I got out, it was quite a while before I could write a poem or a real story, because I'd used 4 years exercising my left brain, and I was critiquing every word I wrote. I couldn't write anything because I became too self-critical until my right brain started to take over again, and I could get in touch with my own heart on the page, you know, and start to write again.
Again, that was Father Murray Bodo. I hope you tune into the second half of the interview, which really revolves around this theme of the heart and how it applies to creativity in the formation of our own souls. I personally found part two to be really special. He reads several writings of his own and delves into where they came from and why he wrote them. And as you'll hear, our conversation even gets quite emotional at the end. But for now, here is Father Cyprian Consiglio taking us out. Peace and all good.
I will lead you into the desert with me and tenderly speak to your heart.